Welcome to episode number 23 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. This week's episode is brought to you by the running company in Ballarat. Brad, it's good to see he's actually finally sponsored a show, put a bit of money where his mouth is, and got on board the Inside Running Podcast.
Yeah, moth's coming out of his wallet.
Yeah. He said something about it's coming up to tax time. He's got to start hiding money, I think. That's what's going on here.
I contribute much more than cash to this show.
Yes, yes, very true. We do appreciate all the work you do down there at Ballarat, and I know there's people, I think they're nearly running a weekly bus down from Echuca just to people, all the locals up here to stock up on their shoes. I reckon another local goes through every week. So, yeah, we appreciate the work you do, Julian, and thanks for sponsoring episode number 23, Michael Jordan's number.
Yeah, well, it used to be my footy number too, so there you go. Yeah, a couple of things in common. greatest of all time podcasters.
We could go there. What has been happening, Julian? We'll go to your week first. Haven't been stabbed by a triathlete in the last 7 days.
Good banter. Even it's continuing on one post that I put up about the triathlon. It's it just continues. I'll get into that later. So Monday, coming off the bloody Sunday up in Sydney, pretty warm run. Just ran easy in the, the afternoon? Ran easy in the cemetery. It was pretty nice up there. And then in the morning, I actually ran with a guy doing Great Ocean Road, Peter Kerr. He was down in, he's actually won Noosa Triathlon, so a bit of a pump up for Peter. He's starting to do more running. But yeah, he came down, he was in Ballarat for some reason, so we ran on the Moose Loop and ran 16K. Tuesday, it appears that I've done a workout. So I ran easy in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I ran 12 by 500 meters, 60 seconds rest on the path around the lake. So I was planning on going to the track, but then I thought, I've got the lake. It was a beautiful evening. 500 meter markers, I'll just go and do 500s. It's a similar sort of session to what I was planning, and that was pretty good, like 83 to 87, which is 246 to what, 254? No, who can do math?
Well, if I look at your Strava, it looks like rolling like 255 pace. 256, yep. 251, 251, 251, 255, 249, 252, 255, 253, 255, 250.
Oh, yeah, that's good. So that's the pace that I was running, and just taking 60 seconds rest. So crept up, got pretty lactic at the end of that workout with the shorter rest. By the end I was pretty – tired, hard to hit the paces, and I was feeling real sluggish, like really marathon fatigued. That's how I was feeling it. Like the mileage hasn't been enormous lately, but it's just been like my last few weeks, 190 and then 147, 146, 178, and then in a bigger week. In those other weeks, like they were with pretty much with days off because of how I was struggling with sickness. So it just feels like I haven't had much rest, and I was feeling real slow and not a lot of pop in the legs on that workout. But yeah, got it done. Next day, pretty tired. So 15K in the morning and then run club in the afternoon. On Thursday, I just ran easy. So again, morning run, 16K. Made a comment about the Strava, the potential that a triathlon will claim that there was a sub 13-minute 5K run during the race. That was a bit of tongue-in-cheek, but will happen eventually.
Got a few replies, though, on Strava.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. Not everyone does, I guess. But you know what's funny is that someone did measure did do a measurement and found the course short anyway. Like, but Jake Burke was a fantastic run, like absolutely smashed it out of the park that race. And can run faster than me over pretty much any distance, I reckon. So I'm not having a go at the legitimacy of the runners. I'm having a go at the how amateur triathletes hold these glory boy professional triathletes up on pedestals and how they're like worshipped as amazing running gods, could ride in the Tour de France, could swim in the Olympics, and could beat every runner in the world as well. That was what that comment referred to. But that was Thursday. Friday, did a workout down in like some kind of like the back streets where I've done a few workouts. I did a workout, I've done a lot. So this I've done for years. I did, sometimes it goes from three reps, four reps, five reps. I reckon I've even done this 6 times, but it's 4 by 5 minutes at around about your half marathon pace and then 30 seconds kind of slower. And it felt pretty tough, actually, probably not quite my half marathon pace at the moment there. But definitely felt the hills because I did the reps out and then back. And so downhill on the way out, I was feeling amazing. I thought, oh, I'm going to have a cracking session today. And then turned around, came back and thought, oh, no, that was downhill. And then just suffered a bit on the way back. I got it done, did a run in the afternoon. And then Saturday, just jogged again a couple of times. In the morning, just ran easy. In the afternoon, went up to, Rutherglen Corowa way, and there's a little rail trail. So got out in the afternoon for 7K before the wedding. Went to the wedding, best on ground performance. Woke up pretty nasty, actually. Very contrast to the week before. And pretty proud to get 36K out the way I was feeling. With a bit of a kick down at the end. Last 8K was like all uphill. So the effort was on and I got a bit quicker towards the end. So that was my week.
What about Bree? Just goes to a wedding and then just bangs out a 36K bike ride the next day to keep you company, eh?
I was running to keep her company.
Well, I was looking at this as well during the week, and there seems to be a lot of Bree riding the bike next to the Moose, which I just don't want you to get a bit mentally weak, Moose, with all this assisted riding. So did you have somebody help you with the 500-meter reps?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yep.
Pace of 500-meter reps.
Do you know how hard it is?
This is starting to fall in the Brady category of just getting the whole town out around the industrial estate.
If you ever come around Lake Wendouree, you'll realise how crowded it is and you need a bike in front of you to clear the way. This was, Bree was 50 metres in front asking people to move. That was all it was. On Sunday, we... I was there for her. She said, I'd love to go for a bike ride. Yeah. And I said, I can go next to you.
I'd love to go for a 36K bike ride the day after a wedding.
Yeah. Will she keep you company on Great Ocean Road?
If she might bike ride that day and I might run with her. But I don't think so.
Could get DQ'd for doing that in a race, I reckon. Bit of assistance.
It's no different, like music's been put forth as a performance enhancer before, I think.
Does she play the music and stuff, or you guys just talk? Just a romantic kind of bike ride run?
Yeah, in between working together and running, riding together, living together, we've got plenty to talk about.
I'm only staring just because I know in the lead up to Berlin we gave Brady crap about having people out on the bike for every like session.
He didn't just have people, he had like a flying V on bikes.
Had that like 3 times. I told you guys the other week I haven't done a session with anyone for like 7 years. I do it for 3 key sessions and you guys rip into me. Bit worried about those sessions though, Moose. Like, nothing special. That'd be usually at 3 minute K pace for you, wouldn't they?
What's that?
That five minute efforts and stuff, yeah.
Nah, no way. I reckon if I went back and looked at those, they're all normally around 3:10 that I've done in the past.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was actually happier with that session than I was, like, I had a pretty average one today, but like, I'm not concerned. I'm running 190Ks. All this work here is for Berlin. Like, Great Ocean Road is, like, will be on the way, and it's convenient that it kind of fits in, but the 190K weeks I'm doing right now aren't for Great Ocean Road. They're for Berlin, and so I'm not too concerned about the quality of the sessions as long as I'm still getting some lactic threshold work in, some speed endurance, and I'm not ignoring my strides and hill sprints as well. So I'm not concerned the numbers I'm punching out, nothing specific. So getting the work in.
Just got to punch them, that's all. Get the work
done.
I'll
leave the Strava accolading for you two boys.
Yeah, good segue to Brad Croker, because he's always impressive on Strava. Talk us through a week, Brad.
Yeah, I don't reckon there's anything too impressive about last week. So Monday was obviously Easter Monday, so it was quite good to be able to sleep in a little bit. Got out for 45 minutes in the morning, and I think I mentioned last week on the podcast that my Achilles had just been a little bit stiff in the morning. On the previous Sunday, it took about probably 20 or 30 minutes for them to actually stop sort of aching. Same sort of thing on Monday. They were a little bit stiff, but then for the rest of the day, they were fine. So I did, 45 minutes in the morning, 36 minutes in the arvo with a few, like, 10-second hill sprints. Thought I'd sort of get back into those again because I hadn't done any of those since Lake Biwa. Tuesday, got out after work for a session and felt absolute rubbish. Before Biwa, I remember talking about how my hip occasionally gets a bit locked up. Just had no pop whatsoever. So the session was 2 4-minute efforts, 2 3-minute efforts, and 2 2-minute efforts off a minute float. And if I'm feeling really good, then obviously the pace would get quicker, throughout the session. But I knew early on that I was struggling a bit. So I was running like 3:07, 3:09 for the 4 minutes, 3:10, 3:07s for the three, and then 3:07 and 3:02 for the twos. And the floats were all sort of 3:35 to 3:40 pace. So, it wasn't a bad session. I still averaged 3:13s for the 23 minutes, but just felt pretty rubbish and heavy doing it. Then Wednesday, couldn't get out before work, so, and had to stay back. So I ended up running quite late, but got through 21K. Hip was still a little bit tight, but felt pretty good. Kept that on the bike paths just because I knew I was going to be stuck in the dark. So I think I ran the last 20 minutes in the dark. So that was 21K at 4:06s. Then I just did a double run on Thursday, nothing special, just an hour in the morning and 35 minutes in the arvo, and then just another hour on Friday. Managed to get in for some treatment Friday night to try and get my hip sorted. And then Saturday, the session originally was, it was 3x2K with a 500-meter jog in between, where I was meant to run a kilometre at, say, 3:15 and then kick down to close to 3 minutes for the second K and then just jog 500 at sort of 5-minute Ks and do that – oh, sorry, 4-minute Ks and do that three times. But just the way my hip had been, I didn't feel like doing anything super quick. So I ended up just doing a straight 8K tempo, averaging 3:16s, which I was reasonably happy with. It was okay. Just the one run for that day. And then got up to 2 hours on Sunday at 4:05s, which that was the first 2 hours I've done since the marathon. So slightly increased my mileage again. So I'm up to 143K week. Nothing super exciting there. I was chatting to my coach on Sunday afternoon, and I think that I've probably lost maybe 10%. Fitness and a bit of strength not doing hills, but I'm still trying to do my sessions like I was in the lead up to the marathon, which if I've lost 10% fitness and I'm still trying to bang out the same sessions, I'm probably slightly overdoing it by like 10%. So just got to try and just increase the mileage, not get too excited for sessions, and just get some consistency back and make sure my body's all good. So that's where I'm at. But yes, there's nothing too much to report really.
You're going to race this weekend, Canberra Marathon Festival, free entry after last year. You'll be jumping into something?
No, so I got a free entry, and originally I was going to do maybe like a workout as part of the half marathon. But just the way last week was with my hip and everything, there's just no point. You know, like I'm, what, five weeks off a marathon. So I was chatting to Sean Crichton last week or the week before, and he said that he was pacing a mate. And so I texted him yesterday and to find out what he was doing. And he's got a mate who's hoping to run 2:55 in the marathon. So I'm just going to do my long run with him. I'll probably run 33, 34K at, I guess, what's that, 4.8s, 4.10s, something like that. So that's what I'll be doing as part of the running festival.
Yeah, just your warm down pace. Yeah. You'll be right.
Yeah, pretty much. So that'll be good.
Got a booth set up somewhere, like where you maybe run people through what happened last year. Got a little coaching set up, coaching with Brad Croker.
none of that. You know me, I have a pretty low profile when it comes to that sort of stuff.
God, give that a spell.
What? Oh yeah, I'm all about promoting myself. I do that every week. So I'll be out for a long run on Sunday. So if anybody's looking to run around 2:55 pace, yeah, look out for me. I'll run that for about
30. You can pay Brad to ride with him.
Yeah. So I guess like that back to basic stuff, Brad. Like, do you reckon you jumped into it too quick after the marathon, then it's come back to bite you this last week?
Yeah, maybe. Like, I didn't feel like those first few sessions that I did felt great. I think probably the back end of term as well. Like going on school camp, I've been pretty much cooked since then. And we've still got. I finished school this coming Friday. So I think that 2 weeks off will be the period where I start to get everything back on track again. And actually, I've got some news in terms of work. So I spoke to the principal during the week, and because at the moment I'm only on two periods on a Wednesday. It's periods 2 and period 5. So I've managed to do a swap. So starting next term, I go into work at lunchtime on a Wednesday. So, so that should make things a little bit easier in terms of either getting a longer session done on a Wednesday or the midweek long run. So, so that should help, hopefully.
So you're still working full time, but you only have to work an hour on a Wednesday.
Yes, I have 2 hours.
High school teachers, they got it easy.
Tune out when he starts talking about this.
So that was pretty nice of them to allow me to do that.
That's a pretty cruisy setup. Pretty good week for me. I had a week of new experiences with my running, which was good. So easy 16K in the morning on Easter Monday at about 4:32s, and then 6K in the afternoon down at Jono's Run. Had a few people rolling around there, which was good. That was at 4:50s. We had a good pack getting around. What did I do? Tuesday I did a session. It was 3K, 2K, 1K, 500 with 3 minutes rest after the 3K. 2 minutes after the 2K, 1 minute after the 1K, and then, banged the 500 at the end to finish it off. Went out the industrial estate, took the wheel out and a new can of spray paint after the last one exploded in the backseat of my car. It took me ages because I had to walk 3K, and I wasn't aware how slow you go when you're walking. So I think I was walking at about 12-minute K pace around the old industrial estate. All the traders were looking at me, just hooking around me, four row singled and short shorts and a measuring wheel and a can of spray paint. So that was interesting. But really enjoyed that session. It was, hit the 3K in 9:15, the 2K in 6:02, the 1K in 2:54 and the 500 in 1:22. For me, that was probably the page turner, my first decent session back working at that pace. It's probably the first time I'd been under 3 minute K since the marathon. In gym in the afternoon, which has been good. I think I've been consistently going for about a month now, And then just an easy 7K with Ben Pearson afterward. He's my gym buddy as well, so he keeps me company. We both just do the – we just lift the bar and stuff in there. So, yeah, we're getting a few laughs, but we're being consistent and we're just fronting up every week. Wednesday was the 90 minutes again, so 4:34 average. And I've been really disciplined. I do this kind of 90-minute loop. I've been doing it for about 5 weeks now. And I haven't hit 20K on it yet, and I've been – try not to get sucked in too much, so I kind of just run on the stopwatch screen, and then I get out the front of my house, and I see that the overall distance is like 19.75 it was last week, and the Brady of old would have run a blocky just to get that at 20K dead, but I've just been stopping the watch there and rolling in the driveway, which has been good. Thursday, had the hardest session of my life, first time I've done hill reps after 14 years of running. So yeah, obviously living in a town with no hills around. I've never done continuous hill reps, and I sent you boys a message just before I left to drive to Bendigo on Thursday afternoon just asking how you're doing, and met up with Andy Buchanan, and he had a couple of mates there as well from Bendigo, a couple of kids he teaches. They were kind of doing half the hill, and I took Archie Reed, who I've mentioned in the last couple of podcasts, down from Echuca, and the hill was 930 metres long, and it climbed about 64 metres of elevation from the top to the bottom. And yeah, halfway up the first one, I thought I was done. Archie went straight past me, and he latched onto Andy, and Andy just makes it look like you're jogging up this hill. It's all rocky and this bush track, and I don't know, like, it almost, something happened in my lungs. It felt like I was like breathing out lactic acid or something. Like, I was just like burning in the throat, and I got to the stage probably after the third or fourth rep. Well, every rep when I got to the top, I'm like, nah, that's it. I'm not doing any more. But because the jog back down took about 4.5 minutes, it took us about 3.5 minutes to get up. Andy was hitting about 3:20, which worked out to about 3:50 kilometer pace. So he told me that when we're warming up, and I'm like, 3:50 is like, that's not hard at all. But I think it worked out to about 2:55 pace when the gap was worked out on Strava. Not sure how that accurate that is. But, I did 5.5. The plan was to do 6. And, I was cooked. The fifth one, I ran 3:40 and I was done, and almost was getting a sore back from climbing the hill and then, like, arching over. And then, it was a strange feeling. But, glad I lasted that long. And, the last one, I kind of talked myself into pacing Andy for the last half of his last rep, and he kind of just floated up there. He's so fit at the moment, it's not funny, but was really happy with that. Pulled up really well from it Friday, had an easy half an hour on the agenda. I should have mentioned at the start of this description that this was my down week, so after Richard found out I was banging out 195k weeks, he made me back off this week and not do any double runs or any junk runs, so every run kind of had a purpose. So just an easy 7k on Friday, and then on Saturday I did 2 sets of 6 by 300 meters off a minute. Had Glenn McMillan and Ben Pearson, who I mentioned before, help me out on that session, which was good. And we just went to the grass track, and Glenn's on a break at the moment, so he just took us through the first 100. He was just doing strides, and Ben paced the next 150 or 200, and averaged 48 seconds. Jogged a lap after the first set of 6, and then did it again. And that's the first time I've done 300 meter reps before, and I probably didn't give him enough respect. I almost treated them, I don't know, sometimes I get scared of 400 meter reps, but I'm never scared of 200 meter reps because they're over quicker. And I almost treated these 300s as if they were 200s, and then you just feel the lactic coming in the last 50-60 meters of every rep, and then do it again. But quite enjoyed that session again. So my week was, they were kind of 3 sessions that I hadn't done before and really enjoyed them, and it was kind of liberating to do them all with people. And kind of new experiences. And then 32K with a group of triathletes this week in Bendigo. Andy Buchanan was out of town, and Jamie the Beast Cook was tapering for Canberra. So did it with, he used to be a pro triathlete, Leon Griffin. He's just come back from Boulder. And Jared Epps and Nathan Mead. So there was a nice little pack of guys, and they're all training for the O'Keefe Rail Trail Marathon in a couple of weeks, and just sat in with them, and some good banter with those boys. So think about 143K for the week, and nice not having to work and stuff in between, and just staying fresh and ticking a few boxes. Looking forward to racing in a few weeks.
Are you going to keep doing hills?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I did a track set, like, we're recording this on Tuesday night, and I did a track session tonight, and I think the combination of the hills, like, I've done 4 Bendigo hilly long runs now, and that hill session, and the gym work, like, you know, strengthen the quads and the hips and all that kind of glutes and that kind of stuff, I'm feeling strong, like, I'm feeling good, and, yeah, I'm really looking forward to actually having a race. So, yeah, I've kind of been a bit selfish, like, I've been spending a lot of time in the car, like, even Saturday night we had visitors in Echuca, and we went out for dinner, and I just kind of, got in the car at 9 o'clock after dinner. Carly had to kind of entertain him back at the house in Echuca, and I just kind of got in the car, drove to Bendigo and did the session there, and I did the long run there, sorry. And yeah, I'm trying to put running a bit more of a priority. And even tonight, like, I drove to Shepparton just to do, you know, a session that was, you know, half an hour worth of work. Whereas in the past, I'd kind of just probably settle for a mediocre session by myself instead of sitting in the car and sacrificing a bit of time to maybe get a better session out. So yeah, I'm liking the way I'm treating running at the moment and feeling kind of, yeah, a new motivation towards it.
How long does it take to drive to Shepparton?
That's about 50 minutes. So yeah, Bendigo is about an hour, and then but like with school holidays, it's perfect. Like, there's no excuse why not to do those things now, because I'm kind of sitting around during the day not doing much at all and kind of can recover and stuff. But yeah, and because Archie, he's running well up here in Echuca, so yeah, having him to train with in Echuca, and Bendigo's got a good vibe about it, and Shepparton, I'll talk about that more next week, but they had kind of 35 people on their track. So compared to being out the industrial estate by myself, or going to Shepparton and training with 35 other guys banging out reps as well, as yeah, it's kind of motivating and good, and I think it lifts you as well knowing there's other people around.
Yeah,
so that's that. So yeah, hooking around. All right, some big news this week, boys. First bit of news, Chris Hame is out of the Commonwealth Games marathon this weekend. We knew about this one about 4 weeks ago, but we couldn't get a statement, so we couldn't report it.
Well, I've got a question here. So when was his decision to pull out made?
So you mean like officially, like when did AA release it?
No, when did he decide to withdraw from the marathon? What date? Like, do we know that?
We've got, yeah, that screenshot, but that we don't know if he'd told Athletics Australia then. Do you know what I mean?
So
I'll find that screenshot, like, see what date that was.
That's no good, obviously. Like, he's missed a couple of games now. Is that right, Croker?
Yeah. So I guess if anybody goes back and listens to the interview that I did with him, we touched on the fact that he got injured. He got selected in the 10K for Glasgow, but had to pull out and then had Achilles surgery as a result. And then in the interview, you know, we obviously congratulate him on making the marathon, and you know, make sure you get the singlet this time around. And he didn't make it. So I ran with him on when was it? The Canberra Day long weekend, which would have been early March on a Monday, and we then teed up to run that Sunday because the next day he was going to Noosa. I'll get some dates here.
Yeah, I've got some dates. So we found out on the 22nd of March. That's when that screenshot comes through, and that's when we started trying to contact him for a statement.
So I ran with him on Monday. I ran with him on the 12th of March, and he said his body was fine. And then so I was on a Monday. I then texted him on the Saturday night on March the 17th and said, "Where are we running?" On Sunday, and he's like, "Oh, I've got a sore hip, so I won't be doing a long run." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I didn't think much of it other than, "All right, he's just being sensible." And then it was during the next week, so between the 19th and the 25th, that I then heard through one of his training partners that he was done. And then I texted him, and he said, "Yeah, I'm no good." So yeah. So it's super disappointing for him.
I felt sick in the guts.
To miss 2 Commonwealth Games in a row when, you know, he hasn't been to an Olympics or a World Championships. So, I hope he does make a team, and I'm sure he will. Because it'll be a great story.
And off that half marathon in Japan, like, he was in form. He was in shape.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
So stress fracture, we've actually spoken about his injury. Stress fracture in the back, is that correct?
Oh, I think in the hip.
In the hip, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, not good news at all.
And that news has kind of created a bit of controversy, and that's we talk about that with this week's guest in the interview, Tom DeCando. But it's created a bit of controversy on the line, and there's an online petition going about how Australia should fill that third spot and send a full team to the Commonwealth Games marathon on this Sunday. What do you boys think about that? You read through all the documents and stuff. It's probably the more important question.
I haven't really entertained like looking at those petitions and everything. It just seems a little bit knee jerk, and like there's a lot of people who are obviously emotional or passionate about it. But there's so much behind it, like the regulations requiring to sort of submit teams and names, and I think one of the countries was like a day late on submitting half their team, and they bloody were going to just let them, they weren't even going to give them spots on the in the Commonwealth Games because of it. And this was a big country, it was like India or something. So as soon as I saw this, I thought, oh, there's no chance this is going to happen, because like say we're talking about Thomas DeCando, he wasn't named in the team, so like they're not going to be not like setting him up as a reserve or something, because you need to be, your name needs to be put forward. Like, that's how I understand it.
Yeah, and I have read through the policy, and if you boys scroll to the bottom of this document that we're looking at the same time here, it does say that after the 5th of March in 2018, there'll be no replacements nominated. So, yeah. You know, that news from Chris Hamer was, what did we say? That was the 22nd of March when we heard about it. We're not sure if AA heard about it then, but it's still, you know, 3 weeks after the 5th of March. And there was also in the original policy as well, and I think it's something that we would have covered originally when we talked about the World Half Marathon teams, but it did also say there, let me read this bit out because I want to get it right. All athletes should note that given the proximity of the 2018 World Half Marathon Championships to the Gold Coast 2018 and AA's aim to finish the top nation on the Commonwealth Games medal table, nomination for Gold Coast 2018 will be prioritised over selection for the World Half Marathon Championships. Athletes will not be eligible to compete at both events. So Tom going to World Half Marathon Champs would also wipe him out for Comm Games.
Yeah, that's so all these people that are on there
petition
talking about it. Yeah, petition. You need to understand maybe some more intricacies before you go and make a Facebook petition.
Yeah, well, kind of also then probably doesn't give enough credit to the other guys that maybe also have the qualifier that haven't been to World Half Marathon Champs, and going by this policy probably might be the next in line.
Yeah, like what is it, Brad Milosevic or...
Jack Colreevy's also got a time in there as well.
Yeah.
And it's complicated because you've got to be marathon fit to be thrown into a marathon at short notice.
Yeah, that's right. It's not as simple as how they're making it out. I guess the questionable thing will be why didn't we name reserves like that? I guess maybe that's a question for the future.
Yeah, and why is that? I don't know. Like that's a really early cutoff for a sport that's so injury prone. I guess like the 5th of March, a lot can happen in your last. What's that, 6 weeks before the marathon? Like,
that's true.
So even if you've got a reserve name, you can't activate it 6 weeks after.
Yeah, a lot of people get injured in that last 6 weeks, that's for sure.
Yeah. That'd be disappointing not to see Chris on the start line on Sunday, but I'm sure Michael Shelley and Liam Adams are going to do us proud anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's plenty more. There's plenty more of this stuff. We talked to Tom, and I've already recorded that interview, and he talks about how he feels about it in this week's interview as well. So you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth. This week, you boys been watching much of the Comm Games? 5K, 10K?
Yeah, been trying to watch as much as I can. Actually, I thought very. I mean, the women's 10K was a much better race than the men's 5K. Mm. It was great to watch. It was action from the gun, basically. Like. I mean, it wasn't super fast, but at least it wasn't like the 5K, which was kind of like watching those bike races, the track cycling, where they do a full-on track stand where they basically stop and don't let anyone, no one wants to go to the front, so they just stop cycling. That's what it reminded me of, how slow that went out.
Yeah, that was super slow, wasn't it? And trying to explain to people as well, I was just sitting on my couch trying to explain to Carly just how slow they were going, and it almost looked like they were just in a jogging stride. Like, those guys weren't even opening up in those early few laps.
They were jogging.
Scary. Stuart McSwain done well, though. What was he, fifth? Fifth, sixth?
Yeah, he ran really well. Like, he put himself in the mix. He got, like, I think Dave McNeil's had maybe an injury battle, so he wasn't going in fully fit. And then Morgan McDonald, like, I've only seen him run one race ever, and that was the national. So I thought he could come home pretty strong. But Stewie was just covering all the moves. He was right there. He was, like, so alert. He just looked super experienced. And, I mean, obviously he can't drop a 3:58 last mile to get the win, but he put himself where he needed to.
Mm. Do you, when they sit in like that, the Australians, do you, like, are you just yelling at the TV to, like, go to the front and control the pace a bit, like Mottram would have once upon a time?
I don't know. It's like, it probably works better in their favour to be able to kick it down, like, than if they run 13 minutes flat. Like, not that anyone, or maybe there would have been a couple of guys there that can run 13 minutes flat, but if it goes out super hard, the Australians have less chance, in my mind.
Mm. Yeah.
I reckon they would probably wouldn't have minded too much, knowing that, like, Morgan McDonald has a super kick on him. Dave McNeil gets to stay with the pack. If it was 13-minute pace and he goes in not fit, he's nowhere near it. He's way off the back. And then you've got Stewie, who I guess he is a pretty good 1,500-metre under himself as well. So they'd be thinking, this is my chance that I could get a medal, rather than I can run by myself for 7th place but run a fast time. Like, I don't think they care about that. They want to be in the mix and have a crack.
And Stewie still has his 10K coming up as well, so probably half thinking about that in the back of his mind to save some bickies.
Yeah, that would be good for him.
And Morgan McDonald had been injured as well in the lead up. It came out later on. Did you guys hear that? Based on the way that he closed at trials, he would have, I reckon, if he didn't get injured, he would have been in the mix for sure, I reckon. He had tib post issues, some like tendonitis, tib post in the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
A few guys getting injured.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the sport, isn't it? It's always, you're always on edge.
Do we get that injured though? Like,
maybe we're not on that edge enough. Like, yeah, we don't seem to. But
I'm not strong enough at it.
I'm almost a year now, so getting close to a year, I guess, since injury.
That 10K was impressive. Celia Salahern is really, few people noticing her now. I had about 5 messages within 5 minutes after that race telling me how I've got to get her on the Inside Running podcast and this girl's amazing and da da da. And I was like, yep, we're onto it. We're trying. We've tried. It's, she's really come on the stage.
Yeah. Well, every race I've watched her run has been amazing, basically. So the Melbourne Marathon, then the 10K at Zatopek, and then the 5K at the National Champs. So every time it's been like she's blown me away, and that happened again. So I thought maybe she was a little bit, it almost inexperienced. You could see the way she was jumping around the packs, like surging around the outside to cover non-existent moves. She'd bustle through people like... I don't think she'd been in a lot of races like that before, and I didn't mind it, but I thought she was expelling a lot of energy doing all those things, whereas like Maddie Hills, although she didn't finish higher, you could tell she had some experience. She sat on the, she ran the shortest distance of nearly every single runner in that race.
Yeah, and she was solid. Like, she was nearly on that back of that pack when they were winding it down. Like, she was just that 10 metres off the back. I was yelling at the TV, I'm like, if she can get on here, she could have really got sucked along a bit.
Yeah.
Race I've seen of Celia, she has that ability where you think the elastic band is about to break and she's about to just sort of fall off the back. And next thing, she just fights and then moves away back up again. And then she starts to maybe just drift off a little bit and then fights again. So it's a pretty cool skill to have. So to be able to, you know, keep, because most people start to drift and they generally don't come back. So so she's pretty gutsy.
Yeah, and Celia's run, like, was she seventh, I think, in the end? I think she got pipped late. Like, it probably deserved a higher finish than that because she was there for such a long period of the time and then just got rolled by a couple of places in that last 100.
Mm. Yeah, she just didn't have the toe. Mm. And she looked like, what was she, 500 metres out, she was absolutely sprinting. And you just knew at that point, she ain't going faster than this, and everyone else has still another gear to go to.
Big PB as well for her, which, you know, is pretty good to run a PB in a championship.
Yeah, I thought it was just tough, real classic bulldog race.
And she was sixth in 31:50. So great run.
Ooh, real solid Gwen's time the other day off a slower start probably.
Yeah, because that was 16:15 or so through halfway, I think.
Yeah,
that's solid. Any other news, boys? There's a few other things that come up. You know much about Geelong half marathon, Julian? Nick Earl, your mate, comes second down there. Got any knowledge?
Not outside of my friends who ran, really. No, I didn't really catch much of it. Good to see Random Kenyan going well at a regional race.
I'd love to know the story where he's come from, this guy. 61-minute half marathon PB rocks up at Geelong half marathon.
Oh, where are they finding him? They are crawling out of the earth.
Mm. I wonder if he's
heard he's doing Great Ocean Road.
Yeah, I heard that as well. I'm going to pay his entry fee.
Well, hopefully he doesn't know how to... 61 maxed out, though. Couldn't run 23K if he tried.
He's run 209 for the marathon. 206. I looked him up. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Probably lives on the Great Ocean Road. Probably just camping there, running all the hills. Anyway, whatever.
Can't be dethroning the king.
He is a lock for Great Ocean Road. I'll see him on the start line.
Berlin half marathon as well. 19 seconds off the world record over there. That's pretty solid performance in the 58 minutes. I didn't see much of the footage, but it was good seeing some of the glimpses on the internet going past some of the familiar sites that we ran through last year.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
Didn't hear about, you know, anything about it, Brad?
Nah, sorry, mate. We're not on holidays, Brady.
I just saw it on Let's Run. I've just been... Just going from there, let's get at the listener question. It's a good one this week. Interested in you boys' opinions on this one. Scott Stacey, he's been with us from day one, I reckon, back in the Road to Berlin days, Scott. His question was, in a race, should you feel obliged to share the load when in a pack and go to the front on occasions, or is it acceptable to just sit and follow? What do you reckon, boys?
I don't think you're obliged to lead, but mind you, like, it depends. If you're in a pack and you're probably a lesser athlete in that pack, then you're probably going to be working harder anyway, and so you're not going to want to go to the front. Whereas if you're comfortable in that pack, then generally you don't have an issue being on the front because you're running within yourself anyway. So I think it comes down to the circumstances. And it also probably touches on what we discussed in a previous podcast, in that you got to know what your strengths and weaknesses are. So if it's a pure race that you really want to win and you've got an amazing kick, then why would you go to the front? You just sit and follow and then kick home. But a lot of it comes down to, I think, how you're feeling on the day. Like if I just go back to Biwa, like there's times when I was on the front of a pack, but that was because I was feeling okay. And then there's other times where if I had a bit of a rough patch, you just sit in. So it depends how you feel a lot of the time. So That's my answer.
Julian, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Like, we're out there. It's different. Like,
depends on the race and who you're racing.
Yeah,
who's in the pack.
I reckon if you're competing for a win, it does not, like, you are not obliged to put in any effort at the front. You just ask Nick Earl. That guy has never led a pack in his life and gets a lot of podium finishes. But the, like, if you're out there running 42K next to someone in 30th place at some random race and you're both looking for times, I think there should be an expectation that you do some of the work in that regard. Like, when we're not competing for wins, I think it's a different story. I think we should help each other out more.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's actually a good point, Moose, cause, and then just adding to that, because there was an instance which when I actually interviewed Chris Hamer, it was the first time that we both broke 30 minutes at Zatopek, and I turned around to him after like a kilometre because we were by ourselves, and I said, do you want to do 800 metres each? So in that instance, I guess we'd agreed to share the lead or the pacing, because we knew that neither of us was going to run a good time if just one of us sort of was out pushing the pace the whole time. So
yeah,
if you agree on it and it's going to be beneficial for both athletes, then yeah, definitely. But if you're out to win a race, then yeah, it's different.
Yeah, and if you had some young kid in that pack who was 18, his PB was 30 minutes and 25 seconds, and he's hanging on for dear life, you wouldn't be turning to him to say, it's your turn to lead 800 here, mate. Like, you'd just respect that he can sit in and hang on for the journey.
Yeah, but if he kicked past you in the last 100 and beat you, then maybe next race you'd be like, this time you can go and do some work.
You can do some work now, young kid. You've graduated. Yeah, it depends on so many factors. But, yeah, you don't want to be – I know when I race that Hobart half marathon, like with Dave Crinitti and Dave Thomas and myself and Zacha, like we all got similar PBs. We're racing for fourth or fifth position, so nothing really mattered, and we were kind of just rotating a bit because we were all there for a hard hit out and a fast time, so nothing mattered. Whereas if that was for the win, that's when someone might say, well, I'm sitting in here and trying to outkick everyone at the end. But yeah, it's a hard question to answer because it's different context, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree. But I reckon we got a good answer out of that.
Yeah, and this also works well with Richard Parascrum's question as well. He'd said, I'd like to hear you guys dig into how and why you feel running in packs helps.
This is a good question, because I always found, like, early on when I was running, I did not like being in a pack. I got out of rhythm, and I probably thought about things too much. I thought about everyone else around me, and I wasn't really concentrating on myself. So I actually preferred running by myself in a race, not in a pack. But as I've sort of become more experienced, I definitely like take advantage of the packs. And probably the main thing about why a pack is good is that you don't have to concentrate on making the pace. So you've got other people around you who are in a pace, and you don't have to constantly be worrying, am I too slow? Am I too fast? You can pretty much just relax and ignore the watch and do your thing. Like, you can just zone out a little more. That's why I like a pack. And also, like, there's always going to be the wind factor. If it's windy, sliding in, you don't get a massive benefit, but when you're running compared to cycling, but it still matters if it's quite windy.
Yeah, and I think those packs where you might go to Gold Coast and there's a 3-hour pacer or a 3:15 or a 3:30 and you're maybe inexperienced running a marathon, but you think you can keep with that pace, like just sitting in that pack for, you know, 37 or 38K and then leaving the pack to try kick home is such a better way to experience a race than trying to think about split yourself and always looking at your GPS every 3 or 4 minutes when you go through the K markers. It just takes all that mental strain out of, thinking. My coach always says just sit in and go to sleep. Like, just, you know, let your mind wander and just, especially if you've got an agreed pace that the pack's running at, or you're with people that know around similar abilities, you can just kind of switch the brain off and just use that mental strength later on in the race when you need it.
Yeah, okay, cool, good answer.
Moose on the loose.
Yeah, well, Commonwealth Games is sort of highlighted a few moose on the loose moments in the household, watching TV, highlights, Facebook videos, Twitter stuff. It's kind of got me angry at a few things. The first thing, I'm going to do a couple of little quick snippets rather than one big angry rant. All right, how does that sound?
Good luck. I don't reckon you can do it. I reckon you're going to list the first one and you'll go off into a rant.
I think what he's trying to say, he's going to piss a lot of people off here because he's just going to put them all in snippets rather than just one group of people.
I'm going to keep it really. And look, maybe I won't rant. Maybe I'll just let other people rant for me. Like on the first one, the first little topic is race walking. Now, this is an interesting one because we have like champion race walkers in Australia, and even in Ballarat we have champion race walkers. So it's a touchy subject and it's sensitive and it's local to me. And my rant on this is not about the athletes. It's not about the fact that like the sport is a little bit different to other sports because you're trying not to go fast, but then you're not allowed to go as fast as you want. Like, it's, I've heard it described as who can whisper the loudest.
The loudest.
Yeah, which is I've heard that quite too. A good, I like the comment. But I'm going to put some footage up on our Facebook page when this gets released, and I'm going to have people offer their thoughts on whether the rules surrounding race walking need to be changed. Because from what I see, it's just an odd jog. That's what this race is. I've got a bit of footage here that's going to show every single person in the pack of walkers running. And there's like 12 of them, and not a single person is using correct race walking technique, having 2 feet on the ground at the same time. And I just think if no one's going to play by the rules here, then why are we doing, like, why is it happening still? And the fact that we had our slow motion cameras, I mean, back in the day, I know, like, the general thing about race walking is the rule is that as long as it's okay, as long as it can't be picked up by the eye or something like that, or the naked eye can't see it, then it's legal. But it just seems so ridiculous now when we have cameras to look at technique and look at the actual thing, what's going on, and say, oh, that's okay because the naked eye can't see it, but I can clearly see in slow motion camera that it's cheating. And then you're starting to pull, like, poor Claire Tallon gets pulled out of a race because someone's seen that she's done it a few times, whereas the girl next to her, there's a beautiful photo, I loved it. Claire Tallon gets pulled out of the race, absolutely devastated. Like, this is the nightmare for a race walker. When the Australian winner walks past her and the photo is taken and both her feet are off the ground at the same time, she's pretty much jogging past poor Claire Tallon, who's been disqualified. It's unbelievable. It's like, well, why isn't she getting disqualified? There's no consistency to it, and it's too much, too subjective.
Yeah, anyway. use the technology.
Yeah, and so I'll put this video up and everyone can have a watch and see what they think.
Put chips or something in their shoe. Can't they do that? Put some like chips or lasers or something in their shoe, and if they, you know, you're a shoe man, if they have 2 feet in the air, you know, it starts like letting off sirens or like fire comes out of it or something like that. Sure, we can do that in 2018.
Yeah, there would be a way, but
maybe not fire. That could be dangerous, yeah.
I don't know about the future of the sport. I'm not involved in it, but I just see like this technology maybe ruining the sport a little. Next thing is with the footage, like the constant coverage of TV and the Comm Games, and this is the first one that I've seen where they've included Paralympics with able-bodied athletes. Like, it's very confusing. So I'm watching an event last night, right, where an Australian with the awesome mustache, Hanlon, maybe?
Yep.
Evan Hanlon.
Yeah, so
great swagger.
Yeah, awesome. I love it.
That's how you
go, Mo. Smashed 100 metres, and I'm going, this isn't the 100 metres, though. Like, and then I saw, oh, yeah, it's this classification. But there was zero description about what this classification is. What's the matter with Evan? Like, I'm looking at him going, this guy's a pretty cool cat. He's very fast at running. I don't see his disability. No one bothers to, like, is it so touchy that we can't explain why these people are disabled? Like, obviously, say Michael Roger gets out, yeah, we can see his disability, but there's plenty that we can't. And it's not, I don't think it's wrong to discuss why these people are running in the Paralympics, because we had to, Bree went and Googled, like, hey, what's wrong with this guy? Like, Google his name. And, oh, he's got cerebral palsy. How? What's wrong with telling someone that? We should know what's wrong with them when they're running. And I think they should explain, like, the categories as well. Like, if we're going to put Paralympics on the TV, at least let people know what they're watching.
And it's so great it's on the TV and it's being included. But, yeah, just a bit more clarification would be fantastic. And why are some included but not others?
Well, that's the next question. Like, where's Michael Roger and where's Jared Clifford? Like, I heard on the Roger interview, oh, it's not included in the games. Well, why not? Like, why don't you get to run there? Why isn't Jared there, like, with an eyesight problem? So, like, what's a vision impaired athlete there? I don't get it. I just don't get the reasoning behind it. Okay.
I think they choose select categories of the Paralympics at the Com Games, I think. So, you know, obviously, last night they chose whatever classification Evan's in, they chose that event at the Com Games, but they didn't choose Roger's classification for Com Games. But I think the same thing even happens at, like, the Para World Championships. Like, not every event is contested. Because, like, I remember there was one year where it might have even been Rogues, that he only had the option of the 800 because the 15 wasn't being run or something like that. So they don't actually have every single event, even at the Para events themselves.
Yeah, if that makes sense. There would be a lot of events. I just like some reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I completely agree with, rather than just put, if it's, I don't know, S9, if that's the category. Like, most people don't know what S9 means. So maybe have S9, then in brackets, what the classification actually stands for. Yeah.
All right.
Well said.
Next rant is very relevant, I think, at the moment, because all I see at the moment is TV news filming showing the Australian girls who stopped and waited for the last place athlete in the 10K, which everyone loved. We all thought it was great after the cricketers cheated that three Australians waited for the last athlete, which I thought was nice gesture. However, my question is, why was this girl, like, did you see the carnage that she was causing every time the pack went around by just...
Yeah, staying in lane one, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like, as a runner, like, maybe, like, to the general public, it's great she's out there and, like, congratulations, you ran 37 minutes for the 10K, like, nice effort. But for me, I'm going, this is going to cause an upset where someone goes down and loses their dream of winning a medal at the Com Games. Like, this girl's so far back. Get yourself in lane four, jog around, run 37 minutes, whatever. Everyone claps you into the finish. Like, legend, you're finished last, and you're going to get more applause than the first place finisher. But get out of the way. Like, for fuck's sake. These girls are running fast, like twice as fast as you. And you're going to cause someone to trip up. You're going to create, like a situation where someone misses a break, or some, like, the Kenyans or whoever uses you as almost like an object when they make their surge. Like, I thought it was really poor that they either didn't pull her off the course or they didn't say, hey, get yourself out of this. You're going to fuck this race up.
Because there's no black and white reason there, is there? Like, we've been in races before. I've been lapped in Zatopek and stuff before, and you don't actually get told in the call room beforehand that if you're getting lapped to move to lane two or three, because that can also create a bit of problems as well.
Yeah, you get yourself wider than that. Like, you're not in the race anymore. I think there should be a rule, like, you get pulled off if you get lap ones.
And there's that many officials waiting, like, on the side of the course as well. Because sometimes the problem is you can't hear them approaching you, and once they're, you know, on you, you move out, you kind of go straight into their way. But maybe once you get lapped, then you go to lane three.
Yeah. This is the Commonwealth Games, like, championships. This isn't the Gold Coast Fun Run where you can run with the stars. You've got to accept that there is a genuine race going on for medals at the front, and you are a hindrance to them. I think, yeah.
I'm glad Moose wasn't an official when I was running Zatopek. Otherwise, I wouldn't have finished one.
Neither would I.
Well, I hope you went to lane four. You clog your obstacle.
No, but I reckon. If it's not agreed that you go to lane four, often it can cause more dramas because the front runners don't know whether the guy's going to step out or not step out. And yeah, but maybe there should be some rule. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you get lapped once, or you get told by an official, hey, there's girls coming behind you. Get yourself into lane four, and that's where you're running for the rest of the race. Because you're not coming back.
What happens if she's like,
an athlete come back?
What about if she's chasing like a national record or something though?
Yeah.
Of like her country and like, you know, you're up against Uganda and Kenya here. Like, they're pretty top notch countries. Like, if you're from, I don't know, Nigeria and you're going for the female 10K national record, which is 34 and a half minutes, you want to be in lane one.
It's not the purpose of the Commonwealth Games. We're trying to find medalists. We're trying to find winners, second place getters, third place getters. We're concentrating on the race. We're not concentrating on some random ass country's national record.
Yeah, good response. You've got me there, I reckon. He's got me, Brad.
It's the friendly games, Julian.
Yeah, this pisses me off too. It's the friendly games, right? But we've just won our 300 gold medals in the pool. Like, we're going to celebrate winning 300 gold medals in the pool and just absolutely creaming, like, athletes who have never even seen water before. Oh, we're so great. 300 swimmers have won medals.
What about Moose on the Loose, though? Like, they've got Bruce McAvaney, Sebastian Coe, Tamsin Lewis, like, live coverage. It's all coming through HD, like, watching the track stuff, and then they're like, okay, we're just going to flick to the pool and watch this, like, random semi-final of, like, Butterfly. And you're like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, these guys are ready to commentate this, like, final or this other heat at the Athletics. And then they just cut away from it. It does my head in.
Yeah. No, I'm past that because I've worked out you can get, if you go on the website, you can actually get, like, uninterrupted streams of each sport, so
yeah, but different commentators, though. You notice that? I like a bit of Bruce McAvaney about it.
No, fuck that. The guy, he talks about it like it's a horse race. He commentates it like, oh, and Sullivan, she comes up to the back, and there's Maddie Hill, she just staying there, rah, rah, rah. And you're like, God, it's 30 minutes long, mate. Like, just let's talk about stories behind one of them or something like that, because this is not changing for at least 15 minutes. But anyway, I'm done with the Com Games. I'm going to go watch them now.
So Bruce,
Moose, my next rant.
Moose on the Loose is on Bruce.
No, I don't know. Bruce
is good. I like him. He likes Athletics. He's a good podcast. Yeah, no. Him on the Howie Games talking about how he got into commentary and stuff, actually. Good recommendation there. General Business, working on a big next live event. We'll keep you posted there. Keep an eye out for that one. We're putting some big things in place there. Brad's pacing, Canberra Marathon for 32K on the weekend. Julian's battling away with high mileage and work commitments. It's written here. Poor thing.
True. Correct.
I'm just enjoying this next week of school holidays before I get back on the grind myself. But, yeah, having fun at this end. Tom DeCano interview coming right up now. Enjoy this one. He's actually running a marathon very soon. I didn't realise he was running this one until he said it, which is going to be news to a few people. Talks about how fast he can run for a marathon, talks about all this Commonwealth Games stuff, talks about how good the Nike 4%ers are. And yeah, thanks to Tom again for his time, and thanks to Brad and Julian for your time again this week. And yeah, enjoy this interview. Thanks for checking out the show once again. See you, boys.
Oh, before we go, next week. Just remember to have a look on the Facebook page and comment your thoughts on the walking video.
Yeah,
I want to hear them.
Share it a couple of times as well, you reckon?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll just see. Let's just have a look at it.
Bang us a review on iTunes or something while you're there as well. We haven't had a bit of a blitz on that for a couple of weeks, so help us out. All right.
All right.
Over and out, boys. Thank you. Enjoy the Commonwealth Games.
See you, boys.
All right, Tom DeCano, welcome to the Inside Running Podcast.
Hi, Brady. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, just saying off air, it's kind of a bit short notice, this one. I added you on Facebook about 24 hours ago and hit you up for an interview, and you were luckily had some time and you could give us a bit of time to share your story and share what's going on in the running world with yourself.
Yeah, no, it worked out all right. Evenings are pretty good for me, so happy to have a chat.
Yeah, well, busy man as well. Like, if people don't know, podiatrist and an elite runner, 2:14 marathon man, and you've just come back from the World Half Marathon Champs in Valencia, so obviously a bit going on at your end.
Yeah, still jet lagged as well.
Yeah, well, do you want to go there first? Talk about that maybe, like Valencia. It's, I know I've been there before, the city, and that just looked fantastic on the live stream watching it.
You watched it, did you?
I watched the replay. I didn't get up live. I must admit, I didn't get up at 4 a.m. in the morning or whatever. But
anyone to get up live for that.
But it was good coverage the next day, like having that YouTube link with all the footage kind of ready to watch.
Yeah, I haven't watched it all yet. But I heard it was good coverage. I guess the race itself, like the city and everything, that it was. Amazing. Like the city itself is pretty cool. Like you said, it's a pretty nice. I hadn't been there before. I've been to Barcelona and Madrid, but I think it's not one of the popular hot spots in Spain, but it's a really nice city. The race sort of went through by the old, a lot of it was sort of through and past the old riverbed, which is now converted into just parks and public recreation area, which is a cool feature of the city, having that, all that space to run and do stuff in. And the race sort of went past through there, through the old part of town, like cobblestone sort of sections. And I think, the highlight, the package would have probably shown off the city quite well. And the finish being sort of at that pretty distinct building, the I think it's the Museum of Science and Art, and it's an amazing building. And we sort of where it finished over water. They've got these big sort of pond, man-made ponds around the building, and they built a boardwalk over the water, and that's where we finished.
Yeah, it looks so good. And that park you talk about, that old riverbed, like, did you do a few runs in there beforehand? Like, I remember when I was just after the Berlin Marathon 2 years ago, and I just loved, like, I shouldn't have been probably doing as much running as I was, but just loved running in that park every morning.
Yeah, we pretty much did all our runs up along there. A few different running tracks that run all through it. So, perfect place to run, really.
Yeah, so take us back, maybe let's go back to the very start when all this kind of was announced. So maybe like December last year, you found out you had the fourth fastest time going into the Comm Games selection with your 2:14:59 at Fukuoka early December. And then we're informed that you didn't get picked in the Comm Games team as the fourth fastest, but then were selected in the World Half Marathon Champs. Is that how it all kind of went about?
Yeah. So pretty much, if what was going to select runners in one or the other. So the guys that got selected for Comm Games weren't going to be selected for this, and vice versa. So that was a pretty awesome sort of consolation prize for me. Not just missing out on Comm Games, but then getting selected for this. So I mean, I wasn't even expecting to get selected for this, so to get the call up, like my first time running for Australia, it was pretty cool and pretty exciting to get put on the team. So
So did you not expect to, like, because your marathon was the fourth fastest, you thought that wasn't going to be enough to get picked in the Australian half marathon team? Like, you ran 65 dead at Sydney to win that on a hilly course. That's pretty solid stuff.
Yeah, I just didn't know. Like, previous years, they haven't really selected big teams for the world half, and I guess they are sort of evolving. It seems like they're selecting bigger teams, and they've sort of loosened the qualifying times and this sort of stuff. So I guess I wasn't too surprised, but the way they were sort of headed with being more generous with selection. But 65-minute half, I guess, I don't think in previous years would have really cut it. I think it's the marathon, the time that I'd say definitely would have got me onto the half marathon team, because they use the half marathon champs as development for marathoners. So I think, the goal, I guess, would try and see me if I can run faster at a world champs or other international event at a full marathon, I guess.
Yeah, and what's that look like that day? Like, does someone call you up and say, like, we're sorry to let you know that you haven't been selected for Comm Games, but you go on to Spain instead?
It was separate. I got a call saying I missed out by one spot for Comm Games marathon, and then I can't remember exactly, maybe it was a week or two after that. I got another call and they said, you've been selected for this, and that I was official first reserve for Comm Games.
Yeah, okay, right. That's an interesting, with all this stuff and online petitions and stuff going on at the moment, I wasn't sure if they even listed a reserve. So that's, quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't know,
they
said it verbally, but I've never seen it anywhere, written down. But, Yeah,
let's go there now then, mate. We'll get to this. We'll talk in detail about Valencia and some of the other big achievements later on, but I think a few people will be tuning in just trying to hear your thoughts on the Comm Games. And so have you had any communication with Athletics Australia since Chris Hamer's pulled out?
Yeah, I got a call from one of the guys from AA, and basically he just wanted to clear the air, let me know why they couldn't. I'm sure they would send a replacement if they could. So basically, it's kind of like it's out of their hands. Apparently, the Commonwealth Association. From what he told me, it's the Commonwealth Association that set deadlines in terms of dates for changes to the team. And it was quite an early cutoff date. I think it was
March 5th, did I read that today?
It might have actually been. I read March 5th originally, but then someone said it was sort of March 12th or something. Still kind of early, but.
Yeah, it's a month ago, isn't it? Like in marathon terms.
Yeah, so cutoff's gone, and it doesn't seem like. I mean, I'd love for someone to turn around and say, we can make an exception or whatever, but I understand, like, rules are rules, and if there's deadlines and they're not gonna, the thing is, like, if they let me sort of compete, then it would sort of then open enough for other people. Like, yeah, I guess it's a bit too much to ask for me. I'm not expecting for them to sort of change rules for me, so that's fine. I'm sort of I appreciate, like, everyone's trying to get behind me, and I love that a lot of people are trying to push for an Aussie to get a call up, and it is kind of disappointing that there's only going to be two boys running. It's pretty and it's obviously upsetting for Chris not being able to run as well, but I understand that, there's some stuff that you just can't rules that you can't break.
Yeah, you can't control, and it's pretty black and white as well by the looks of things as well. Like, like it's this rules on paper, and it's if you break it once, it opens up the floodgates to be broken many times in the future.
Yeah.
So the next question kind of is then, so how do you cope with, you know, people starting petitions and signing them on Facebook? And I just looked at it today and it's got about 984 people have signed it. And I said to you off air before, it seems every time I log into Facebook today, I've seen it shared 3 or 4 times and awesome support. But if you know the rules and you kind of accepted it, how does all that kind of sit with you?
It's like mixed feelings. Like not really mixed. I mean, it's pretty cool. Like I appreciate that everyone's sort of getting behind it and are trying to I guess get me onto the team. But and in the background, I've sort of, you know, made an attempt. My coaches have made an attempt to get me, you know, get me a late call up. And but now I'm just sort of getting to the point now where, although I am sort of appreciating all the support and effort people are going into signing this petition, I don't think at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to actually cut it. I don't think it's actually going to change the outcome of the decision for them not to select a replacement at this stage.
And I guess
so. Yeah, it's a little bit sort of it's sort of disappointing that. You know, people are putting this effort in and trying to make things happen, and I just don't see it amounting to anything, unfortunately.
Yeah, but good confidence booster for you to see so many people in your corner and willing to throw some support.
Yeah, and I mean, if it was me, and I can see why they're doing it, because it's kind of a home comp games, and we're not sending a full marathon team, and we've got It's a sort of event. We've got like a strong history in running well, and so it would be good if we had a full team there.
Yeah, well, it seems a bit of a no-brainer. I can see why people are signing those petitions and stuff, especially if people are qualified and they're young and they've only ran 2 marathons, and this would be kind of vital experience for them.
Yeah,
Anyway, we'll let the policymakers work with that one and deal with that in the future. And you'll watch on Sunday. What will that be like?
No, I'll watch it. I mean, the thing is, like, I didn't think I was ever gonna run it anyway. It's not like I don't know, like, so I'm not too gutted or anything. It's fine. Like, I've already made peace with, you know, I got to run in Valencia. I got to run at the World Half Marathon Champs. That was amazing. So I'll watch it and I'll enjoy it. And I hope the other boys go really well. It'd be good to see Shelley back up or see Liam, get up and run a PB and maybe even, I don't know, get up there, get up on the podium.
Yeah, because originally wasn't that in the policy as well, that, like, it's one or the other? No one can do, like, the World Halves and the Com Games?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, that's all good. Take me back to that Valencia race, though, mate. Like, looked insane, the amount of depth in there, and just how many talented guys were there. Like, how'd the race pan out for you?
Yeah, it was crazy. It's an experience, like, being... just from even the warm up, the call room, and you're just seeing what all these top guys. I mean, I'd be really interested I wonder how many of these guys are professional or whether a lot of them are just sort of working. This is sort of like a part time thing, but they look professional. They look good. Like, you're in there and you're just intimidated. All these runners doing these. It's just interesting to see different countries and the way that they do their warm-ups. And, like, Japan, like, the Japanese guys were warming up 2 hours before the race. They were doing heaps of drills and all this stuff. I'm like, wow.
Are you guys all together at this stage? Like, is there, like, a massive call room with all... because how many people in the race? Maybe, like, 120, 130?
I think there was 160 in the men's race.
160, yeah. So that's huge. Yeah. 160 elite guys.
I think it was the biggest. I think it's. I think it was the biggest field they've ever had. Maybe I heard that it was a big field. Yeah, it was a massive. We were in this massive underground car park as the warm up area, just underneath the museum. So it was a weird. Like, you walk in there I felt like, it was almost like a prison. And then you have these little these little sectioned off garage sections for each country, and we sort of shuttled in their little our little boxes, and I felt like we're about to be we're in the Hunger Games or something. We're about to be released out to fight each other. It was weird. It was pretty cool though. Like, yeah, it definitely got the adrenaline going, and yeah, got you into the mood to race.
And were you nervous and stuff? Like, you know, DJ there as well, and Collis, like, how were you guys faring? Like, just three of us there in that kind of situation.
Yeah. I don't get. Yeah, I mean, I was obviously as nervous I've been for a long time. Like, in recent years, I don't get as nervous going into races as I have done years ago. But for this one, it was almost like taking a step back and getting really nervous again, because it was also new and it was obviously a new level of competition. Yeah, the boys were good, and Collis, very laid back. So he was kind of the calming factor, I think, for the rest of the team, which was nice.
Yeah, and were you on the start line near him when he hit the deck?
Well, you ran straight over him. No, I didn't run over. I was on the side, so no, I wasn't one of the guys that trampled him. Have you seen the video of that?
Yeah. And we spoke about it maybe a couple of weeks ago. I think Julian was touching on it.
Yeah, it was brutal. No, he got called up to be on the front line, I think, because he's obviously done so well on the international stage previously.
Yeah,
that's right. So he was on the front. They said, you're on the front line before when we were in the call room. So he got put there. And I think, I mean, he said, to be honest, he probably would have rather not be right on the front, obviously, after what happened. It's terrible. He was dead last. He got trampled and had to, the rest of the race was just playing catch up.
Yeah, but still come through and run 63 minutes. Like, it's a decent run.
Yeah, very impressive.
And what about you, mate? Did you find yourself like in a pack and working with a few guys, or just trying to keep up, or how'd the early stages of the race go?
Yeah, to be honest, it went pretty much to plan. I don't think I could have run it. Obviously, always at the end of the race, you think, how could I have done it differently, or how could I've run better? But I ran to my potential on the day, so I didn't go out crazy hard. I think DJ, he went out pretty solid with the leaders, and obviously Collis was behind me until I think it was only 4 or 5K he went past me, but I sort of started conservatively, ran with a pack of maybe 8 for the first 8K, and then made a bit of a break to another group up ahead and ran with them maybe the next 4 or 5K. And then we hit maybe 5K to go, and I just went by myself and just basically the last, and that's why you might have seen the crazy splits, like the guy that won, because the last 6K was tailwind, slightly downhill, so you could just run on, you didn't have to worry about it. I should touch on that. It was an extremely windy day, so that was why part of the plan was to sit in a pack and to work with a pack, so I wasn't so exposed. So the last 6K, I was happy just to, it worked out well, because, you know, I could just, there was enough time to give everything else that I had out there, plus I didn't have to worry about getting smashed by a headwind.
Yeah, do you know what you hit that 5K split in from 15 to 20?
No, I don't know really. I think they were all under 3 minute Ks, I think, the last, whatever, 5 or 6K. I'm not sure exactly, but yeah, it was probably, I think it was the quickest of the race was that, for me, was that, yeah, that last 5K.
And came across the line in 64.18, like big PB, happy with that?
Yeah, definitely. That, I mean, that was the main, I was kind of like, before the race, I was kind of hoping maybe I'd like to sneak under 64, but I was happy, like, to get a big PB, 40 second PB. I can't complain. Yeah,
and even that experience, so that's a solid time. Not many guys in Australia are on quicker than that now, and a big improvement from that 65 dead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I was definitely happy with it. I'm happy with it.
And, like, did you go over there? I think I saw on Strava you were in London for a couple of days beforehand. Was that right? Like, did you get over there and get over the jet lag and get all that sorted?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. My wife, Lana, is from London, and her family live in southwest London. Any opportunity to get over there is great, obviously, to see the family, but because they live in that part of London, you've got Richmond Park, Bushy Park, Wimbledon Common. You've got all these areas that are just fantastic for running, so good. So the plan for me was just to get, you know, a few extra days over jet lag, see the in-laws and her, you know, brother and sisters, and hang out there. And then I was there a few nights, and then into Valencia to meet the rest of the team. And so I felt like I was well over jet lag with about 5 days leading into the race, which was great. So I felt I felt totally 100% going into the race in terms of just not jet lagged at all.
Yeah, cool. And take me back to Fukuoka, like that massive breakthrough in the marathon, so the 2:14:59. I'll listen today on another podcast, the Aussie Runners podcast, which you did an interview there, that Fukuoka wasn't always the plan.
Yeah, no. I was going to do Melbourne Marathon again last year, but I got the flu a week before, got the flu, decided to can it. It wasn't going to happen. I was pretty gutted. I had that was the backup. So that was perfect. It was just the day before the Com Games cut off for getting a qualifying time. So it was sort of the last chance to run a Com Games qualifier on a course that would facilitate that. So yeah, Fukuoka being an amazingly fast course, well organized, place easy to get to, you know, Japan with like hardly any, you don't really get jet lag going over there. So I had a blast in Fukuoka. It worked out well. I loved Fukuoka.
Mm. Well, obviously, yeah, you've only ran the two marathons other than winner Melbourne in your debut. But, I went to that Nobuoka marathon this year because you went to World Half. So I got to experience. Yeah. Yeah, that was funny how that worked out. But I got to experience.
That looked pretty cool. That looks like a pretty cool event.
That's
as well.
Cool. Yeah, you'll have to go next year. You actually have to take your trip and not pull out with 5 weeks to go make an Australian team. But I know what you mean with that Japanese experience. It's just so clean and well organized and efficient.
Amazing.
And was the depth, like, did you just get to sit in a massive pack the whole way there at Fukuoka?
No.
Opposite.
There was no pack.
Oh, sounds like me at Nobuoka then. Yeah, right.
Yeah, kamikaze runners. I heard about the way they run beforehand, and I obviously looked at the splits from previous years, and so I was prepared. And that was a good thing, mentally being prepared that I probably wasn't going to be in a pack, because, you know, yeah, they all went out like the crazy. So I think I was only with some runners maybe for the first 2K, 3K, and then it was just trying to run the pace I wanted to run, I think running in a pack is nice, but it's also nice just passing runners continually. So that was what happened with me in Fukuoka, was I just always had a runner up ahead to pick off and to sort of work towards and then pass. So my goal pretty much all the way through was not to, you know, when I would get to a runner, I would just really make an effort not to sit on them and just go past them and make them work to latch on. And that worked well. Mentally, it worked quite well just having that goal up ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit like Brad at Lake Biwa, just mowing people down and just focusing on the next person every time you pass someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you expecting like a big PB like that though? Like, I know when you won Melbourne in 2016, like 2:20:53, like pretty much took 6 minutes off it.
Yeah. I didn't think I'd run that fast. So I was hoping maybe 2:16 or, yeah, I thought best case I might run 2:16-ish. So I don't know. I, I'm finding out that I am better suited at the long stuff, really. I thought I would be, and really, I think the longer it gets, the better I go. So, things came together for that race. Obviously, Melbourne was, I didn't run to my potential in Melbourne because of the conditions. So the time didn't come in. I should have run faster in Melbourne on debut, but it was that shocking day that was just so windy. I was leading for a lot of that race. So I really caught the wind.
Yeah, that was just about winning that day in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah. At the start, yeah, pretty much. I still had hopes of running under 2:19 mid rate, like getting up to about halfway up to 25k. But then after 25k and just hitting some more of those gusts, I was like, no, this is not going to happen today. So there was the golden run, and me and a guy I trained with, Matt Cox, we were working together, alternating the lead for a good section of that race during Melbourne, to try and maintain the pace. But it still took its toll eventually. Yeah. Wheels kind of fell, the pace fell off, and then it was about winning. I thought, okay, just try and get the win. And I was expecting Dua was in the race, and I thought, yeah, he's going to win this. He just ran Gold Coast, and he ran the half in something super quick. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was super quick.
63 something, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a 63 something. So, and he was just sitting there cruising along, and I thought, he's just going to go past us at any point. But it never happened. So once I was able to break from Dua, I knew I had the race sealed, which is a really nice feeling with still 6 or 7k to go.
Yeah, so what, just before you like got off St Kilda Road and headed up the hill at the 10, like a lot of our listeners would have ran Melbourne and know exactly the course?
Yeah, so we came up is it St Kilda Road that goes up there?
Yeah, the main one, yep, that's like towards the art centre.
Yeah, so heading up there, back towards, I guess we're heading towards Botanical Gardens for that section, and it worked out so perfectly for me because the half marathoners intersect, came into our course at that point, and Ben Morrow, I think he was coming third at the time in the half, sort of came past us, so he was running faster than us. And I thought, okay, this might be an opportunity. So I latched on to him, and a lot of credit has to go to him because he was my windbreak for about 4 or 5k going up there. And after, yeah, it was only after a couple of minutes, I think I looked back and I was, the Dua was back off the pace. So at that point, I knew I had my windbreak, and I knew I'd be tough. I thought it's going to be very tough for anyone to claw back at this point.
So. Yeah, and what's it like? Like no wall that day? Like nutrition fine and just good experience for the marathon?
No wall, just a gradual. I was pretty smashed towards the end. Just gradual fatigue. My feet were really hurting. And just the legs in general, it was a leg beat up sensation. It wasn't so much bonking or energy. I think I was pretty good nutrition energy wise. It was just the beating of the legs were just the mechanical sort of feeling where, you know, I'm just trying to get the legs to keep ticking over.
Yeah. And what's it like debut marathon, run into the MCG, like massive stands all around you, just picked up a big, like a major Melbourne marathon, like a big city marathon in Australia, good paycheck, like you must be pretty happy about marathons at that stage.
Yeah, I'm like, this depends for me, I think, yeah. No, it was amazing. I had like my family in the stands and you know, yeah, the debut, like it was just, yeah, you can't, I still can't really top it. It was a pretty amazing, I think, yeah, there's a few times in my running career where I have like these sort of, I get pretty emotional, and that was definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that the reason why you wanted to go back to Melbourne again, like to try to go back to back and nail a quicker time this time?
Yeah, good experience previously, run faster and hopefully pocket some more money. I mean, yeah, the prize money there is pretty great for an Aussie road race. So.
Yeah, and not having to travel far as well. Like, it's not like you're out of pocket big time to get there or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you reckon you would have ran as quick, though, if you ran Melbourne last year? I know there was a couple of Kenyan guys who won it in a pretty similar time than what you ran at Fukuoka. Like, do you reckon you would have ran, like, just with them and tried to be competitive for the win?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've obviously thought about that. Like, you know, I wonder what would have played out, whether – I mean, I was pretty fit leading into that as well, so – I don't know. You just don't know. Yeah, it would have been cool. It would have been interesting to see if I could have really been at it. Yeah, run. It would have been fun, I guess, running with them. But it would have been interesting to see if I could have actually got up and beat those guys. I mean, yeah, I just don't know, I guess.
Yeah, that brings me to the next question. This one's from Julian, and he wanted to say, really press him on how fast he reckons he can go over the marathon. Don't put up with any bullshit answers. That was what he asked. I've got to get. So he obviously, like, he's a 218 man as well, and he'll be kind of talking about different sessions, and we'll get to some of your training later on. But I know you've said in interviews before that everything didn't go to plan at Fukuoka, and you reckon you can go a bit quicker, but how much?
I don't know. I definitely think a 212 is. Yeah, I definitely think 212 is reasonable, considering, it wasn't a super long build up. I was pretty knocked out by that flu leading into Melbourne, then had a couple of niggles. Achilles was sort of a bit niggly, didn't get as much training in as I wanted to. And so, I don't know, I just think, with more consistent. Like, I've never been that consistent, so I think if I can, and gradually in recent years, I have been getting more consistent. So I think 212 definitely is achievable. How much faster than that, I don't know. But the next stepping stone, I think, would be to try and get another 2 or 3 minutes faster.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what kind of training, like, what kind of mileage and stuff are you hitting? Like, is there room to move there?
So peak weeks would, I think I cracked 200K for the first time ever, last year around, I think it was before my Sydney half win. I think I might've just got over 200K 1 or 2 weeks, and then I might've been around, sort of 160, 170K a week, averaging leading into Fukuoka. It's not so much, I think, mileage is definitely helping. It's getting the legs good to go over the long stuff, but a limiting factor for me is my speed endurance. So I think which I haven't done a lot of lately, and a little bit because of Achilles issues in the past, is faster stuff. I think once I do start doing some more, the times will come down in the longer stuff. So getting efficient, doing faster stuff. So I don't run on track. Like, I haven't run a track session in a long time.
Yeah, right.
So I'd like to get on the track again and do shorter intervals.
But you're right. Like, and you mentioned Achilles before, like, there's certainly risks involved when you start banging out, 462 or 63 or whatever it is, and solid 800 meter reps and stuff like that.
I wouldn't be running. I don't have pure speed. Like, but. Yeah, I reckon to get efficient, like stuff that, I need to do 400s, and I need to be running, even if I'm getting down around the 64, 65s again, which I haven't actually run that pace for years, probably, doing intervals. But I need to get back to getting the legs actually efficient, running faster, and I think with the K's as well, that'll all sort of progress me to maintaining a faster pace over the marathon.
Yeah, right.
So that's the big thing, I reckon, for me. And I've chatted to my coach about it. He's definitely keen for me to progress that stuff as well.
Well, this is interesting. So if you weren't doing that, like, speedy stuff, like, what were, like, typical sessions looking like leading up to Sydney, like that win in the
tempos.
Half? So what kind of pace though?
Yeah. Not much faster than race pace. I mean, no, I did do some. I do some some interval work, but it's like probably the shortest intervals I was doing leading into the Sydney half and the marathons was probably like 1200s.
Yep.
1200 reps, stuff like that.
And yeah. Sitting around like
so obviously,
half
yeah, I'll be running
pace.
I'll be running under 3 minute K pace for that.
Yeah.
So faster than half marathon pace, but probably the, like really 10K sort of pace stuff. But yeah, I think I need to have some sessions that are faster.
Yeah. And like key marathon sessions, I always like, and we talk about it every week with the boys on the show, like have like Benny Saint, we should mention that he's one of your coaches and obviously the Australian 10K record holder, like a good man to have in your corner. But I guess there's kind of two questions there, like what sessions for marathon is he dishing out considering he was more of a 5 and 10K specialist?
Yeah. So in terms of, the sessions, it was like long tempos, maybe up to 16K at marathon pace. And then what I really enjoyed doing is, so I've got Benson Lawrence and Gary Howard, they work together with, Gary does a lot of my programming as well. So he got me doing, towards the end of some of my long runs, doing a 20 minutes tempo, and I ended up doing that probably, or it was faster than marathon pace, so that was kind of like a speed session injected in towards the end of a long run, so slightly fatigued legs and then trying to get myself to run fast. I think they really helped with getting strength up, so that was definitely a key marathon session, and one of my favorite sessions to do really is doing long run with 20 minute hard towards the end of the run.
And are you talking like 2 hours and then kick down for 20 minutes or like 32K or
no
how?
Some of them I was kind of reading the sessions wrong for a while. I thought he was writing down do the tempo at the very end of the run, so I was doing them I think there were 2 hour long runs with a 20 minute tempo, and I was doing them at the end. So I was doing an hour 40 at maybe 4 minute Ks. So not jogging, so just a comfortable, easy sort of pace. And then I would go hard at the end, 20 minutes. But he actually wanted me to go at 80 and then do 20 easy at the end. So the last couple of times I did it, it was 80 minutes at that comfortable, easy sort of pace, 20 minutes hard. And then 20 minutes again at that comfy, easy pace.
Yeah, right. Some good stuff in there for the listeners out there. And that must just give you confidence knowing that you can kick down to that marathon pace with fatigued legs.
Yeah, they were the biggest confidence boosting runs for sure. Yep.
Have you got something like, obviously, you've just come off a half marathon PB and you're just following you on Strava. Like, it looks like you're pretty fit and getting some good long runs in and stuff like that. So have you got a marathon on the cards coming up shortly?
Yeah, I'm doing camp for a marathon this weekend.
Oh, really?
Oh, what day is it? Yeah, this weekend.
It's like 5 days away.
Yeah.
Ah, very good. That's a good exclusive for the podcast.
Sorry?
That's a good exclusive for the podcast. I'm not sure how many people know that.
I haven't really made it too public, I guess. But I only entered couple of days ago just because I just want to see how the body pulled up, so I just thought do the half, see how the body pulls up, if everything's feeling okay. I just wanted something soon after just to have a hit out, I'm not going there to try and run a super fast time. I'm just going there to sort of compete and enjoy myself. When I'm not injured and racing, I enjoy racing, and so the body's good. I just want to race more, so why.
And nothing in between, like, and then you'll hit like a spring marathon or you do something as well if you're not like chasing the time this time.
I've decided, I'm pretty certain I'm going to do Gold Coast Marathon. Mainly I probably would have chosen one a bit later and try and run a bit fast, like maybe another Japanese one, but my wife's pregnant and she's due at the end of July, And so I'm thinking, you know, what's going to happen? I'm going to be pretty busy. I'm already busy. We got a son already, and you know, he takes up a lot of time. He's awesome. He's fun, and you know, it's we have a blast with him, but he keeps us busy. So number two, I'm more anxious about number two than I was with our first, because I know how much work it is. So yeah, I want to do this marathon. We'll do Gold Coast, and then we'll just see what comes up after that, how crazy life gets and how much training I get in, how sick I get.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. Like, yeah, nearly two kids on the way, and you own your own business and working full time and banging out 200K weeks.
Yeah, it's just it's a juggling act. It's always good fun. Trying to juggle everything.
Gold Coast is kind of an interesting selection, because like the Kenyans will be there and Ethiopians and Japanese and go through in like 65, kind of 210 pace, won't they? And like, do you go with it, or do you get stuck in no man's land for a big chunk of the race?
Yeah, it's going to depend how training goes. So if I can get, like, if I stay injury free and my training just keeps progressing in the next, whatever it is, 2.5 months till the race, then I'd be tempted just to go a bit like a Japanese kamikaze style and just go out with the pace and just see, I don't know if I'm going to go out at you know, that pace, 210 or, you know, what pace they're going to go out. But I guess it'll depend what they go out and I may just, if it's, even though it is probably a little, even if they do go a little bit too fast, I may just go with it and just see what happens.
Yeah.
It depends how training goes, but yeah.
Cool. It's good though. It's good to see like our best Australian runners racing in Australia. Like it's good for the sport.
Yeah. Because I mean, no Aussies haven't, like, apart from like when Troopy ran fast there at Gold Coast, like it doesn't seem like that many Aussies are going there to run fast times. So
yeah.
They're trying to have a nice big incentive for Aussies. I mean, it's pretty unrealistic. There's not many Aussies that are going to run 210, but they're putting up a lot of money for an Aussie to run. Well, I'm sure you probably saw that. They're trying to get Aussies to...
Yeah, 30,000 under 210, isn't it?
40 grand.
40,000, is it? Yeah, 40,000. Yeah. It's big money.
Yeah.
As you said, kamikaze, just see what happens. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Go with it. Yeah, it's a good point you brought up, because Brad and I paced out of the lead female last year, and we were kind of, like, there was the lead men were out in front, and we were kind of the next probably significant group. A couple of guys were dwindling in between and doing their best to kind of get some stuff rolling, but in between 210 and kind of, you know, 224, what pace we were running, there wasn't much happening at all.
Yeah, it could be a tough day out there.
Hey, you got to get a couple of mates, a couple of training partners, hook you through the first 35K, and then bang it home.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I messaged Brad Milosevic today. I'm like, you got to run. You got to give 210 a crack. You got to run. You got to run Gold Coast.
Well, DJ's got to run too, isn't he? Your mate from the World Half Marathon champs.
What's that? Sorry,
DJ Gabrielesi. He's going to have a run as well, I think.
Yes, I did. I chatted to DJ after the race. I'm like, what's next? And yeah, we briefly chatted about, he said he might give Gold Coast a go. So that could be interesting.
I reckon Brad Croker's half thinking he might give it a go as well. He hasn't dropped too many hints yet, but he's thinking, yeah, I think he wants
he
to
should.
Go out there. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he could run it. He could keep you company for a while. He could pace you for the first 35.
That'd be fun if we get a group of us guys. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, no, that could be good. Hey, I haven't got much more time with you, but Julian, being in the shoe industry and yourself as a podiatrist, he wanted to know what your like latest take is on the footwear industry. What are you seeing, trends in footwear and mistakes people are making with their shoe selection?
It's interesting times. Obviously we saw, you know, there was a big sort of minimalist boom not too long ago. Actually, it seems like a long time ago now with all the super cushion shoes that are out, but it wasn't that long ago that I was seeing lots of, runners come in with Achilles or metatarsal stress injuries and stuff like that from getting caught up in going minimal to, you know, low drop, not much cushioning and that sort of stuff. And now it's sort of evolving towards super cushioned and responsive midsole, so energy return. So obviously Adidas were were at years ago, they were the market leaders in energy return. They brought in the Boost midsoles in their running shoes. They rolled it out in all their running models, and now the big thing now in footwear seems like energy return. So Saucony's got ever run midsoles, energy return. Brooks has got Levitate, this model with their energy return stuff, and then obviously Nike. Everyone, I know you guys like your four percenters. So
you like them too, don't you? Do you race them at Fukuoka? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I did stalk your Facebook page today and saw a couple of pictures of you in them.
Yeah. So, that's sort of where it's headed. And I think there's not much wrong with that. I mean, you can't really go too wrong with getting more energy return out of your running shoe, the midsole of the running shoe.
And like better for like injuries and stuff, like, and like Julian always bangs on, he reckons they're better for recovery and you bounce back better and stuff like that. Like, do you feel the same?
I don't know so much if they're going to protect from injury. Potentially, like a lot of the energy return midsoles are also more durable. So in terms of maintaining the cushioning for longer, that could be helpful for injury prevention because the midsoles are lasting longer and so potentially if you are pounding out K's on the road, you might be if you're still replacing your shoes sort of as regularly as you were before, it just means you're probably not killing them as much. You're still having relatively more cushioning in the shoe for that same period, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
they're more durable. A lot of people are talking about the 4% is not being durable, but a lot of that's cosmetic. The outer shell shreds quite quickly. The first few runs, it shreds. It looks terrible. The midsole creases, but
yeah,
it's primarily the shell. It's a cosmetic thing. So, like, I think they're quite, the cushioning is gonna, like, I've done probably about 300K in one of my pair of 4%ers with racing and training. I'm doing training, some tempos and sessions in one of the pairs now, and it still feels out of the box. It still feels like this one's about 300K is old, feels more cushioned and responsive than any other racing flat I've worn out of the box.
Yeah, I'm so, with you, yeah, because I'm onto my, I got a second pair for Nobioka, but I still do all my sessions in my first pair that I wore for Berlin, and same thing, like I'm just, they look shocking, like it's kind of ripped up and all creased and stuff, but I'm still banging good sessions in them. I mean, they're still feeling pretty good, not as good as the fresh ones, but yeah, good.
Yeah, did you see that Japanese guy on post this? Yeah, 2,000 Ks or something, he reckons he did.
I think I'm probably at like 500 or 600, but
So that might be a bit excessive, but it just shows, it goes to show that, you know, that they are more durable than what people give them credit for.
No, that's it. And you haven't copped any flack? Like, Brad copped some flack about people saying he wouldn't have ran as quick if he had normal racing flights on and things like that. Like, you didn't get anything like that after Fort Walker?
I mean, it's just part and parcel of running. I mean, every racing, I mean, it's just going to keep happening. They're going to bring out new technology, new energy return midsoles and whatnot. And so you just use what's available and what's legal. So I haven't copped much flack, and I wouldn't really listen to it because, you know, it's not really that valid. You just use, it's available to anyone. I mean, obviously it's limited, it's hard to get at the moment, but wanted to,
hard to get a pair at the moment.
Yeah, they're really hard to get. Yeah.
Well, have you got a fresh pair for Canberra this week, or are you just going to wear the same ones, like an older pair?
I've got three pairs now.
Pairs? Jeez.
Yeah, I've got.
What colours you rolling? I love how this podcast just talk turns into like 4% chat every week.
Yeah. I could chat about him for a while. I've got the grey, blue fox, or whatever it's called. The light blue, and that fluoro red one.
Yeah. Very good.
Which I wore at the half. So yeah, I'll probably wear that one in Canberra.
Yeah, that's good. Have you sussed out the competition for Canberra? A couple of Victorian boys going up there.
I don't know who. Yeah, I got no idea who. You tell me who's running?
Yeah, Dane Verway's got a run. Who won Hobart in 2:24 high this year? Dion Fnokiara is going to run.
Yeah, no, Dion.
Craig Appleby is going to have a run from he ran Melbourne last year in about 2:24, 65-minute guy. You know, Apples.
Yeah, I know of him. I've never met him, but I know the name. Yeah,
they're all good blokes too. So yeah, you'll enjoy.
Oh, that sounds good.
Be a nice lead pack with you, I think.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
Turns into a good run. I'm not sure how excited they're going to be knowing that you're running now, 2:14, man. But
I don't know. I don't really feel like I still feel jet lagged. I'm just going to use that as an excuse. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, I'll feel good and have a good run. But yeah.
And any tips about like life balance and fitting it all in, Tom? Like Brad's got a baby on the way and he's working full time and trying to teach, and Julian's managing the shop, and I'm trying to manage a bit of work and running as well. And like we've all got less on our plates than you do, and seem to struggle at the best of times. So help us out. How do you do it?
I guess you gotta find what works for you. Obviously you gotta have someone that's supportive. So my wife, obviously, you need a partner that's gonna be supportive of essentially what's your hobby. So that's been super helpful. So she'll do a lot of, like, if I gotta go run after work, you know, she's gonna be feeding Leo, our son. She's gonna be putting him to bed and all that sort of stuff. I try and get in runs like before work or during, like, so I run my own business, which is a lot of work, but it's also can be flexible. So I can set some time aside during the day, certain days during the week, to go out and get a run done, either just before I come home or during the day or before work, that sort of stuff. So just try to fit it in where you can, I guess. And economize your time. I don't know. It's probably a pretty shitty answer.
No, that's right, mate. We'll take that. And I think it's probably about, getting your priorities right, not wasting it, you know, spending time on Facebook and things like that, and just, running or with the family and put your time into the main things.
It's tough. Like, it really feels like I'm not giving anything 100%. Like, I'd love to do more. Like, I've been meaning to do a strength program for months and months and months, years maybe, but like I just don't have time. Like I can squeeze in the running, I can squeeze in a quick stretch, a quick little rehab exercise if I'm rehabbing from an injury or a niggle or something. But the other stuff, like I wish I had time. And it's fine. Like it's not a big deal. Like I'd rather spend time with my son than going out and doing a cross training session or whatever. So I guess you just gotta, you gotta compromise, and you gotta I guess be happy with the choices you make. So I'm happy at the moment that running, I'm trying to prioritize it a fair bit, but you know, at the end of the day, I've got other stuff going on that I enjoy, that I love doing. And so I just, you just got to fit it all in and try and, make it work.
I reckon that's a good spot to leave it, mate. There's a lot of listeners who will be busy as well. And, really appreciate that, A, you're a busy man and giving up some time for us tonight to share those stories, especially around the Comm Games, and B, you make it work, and everyone can in their own life, no matter how busy they are.
Yeah.
Where can people follow the journey on social media and stuff? Tom, this is after we've talked about maybe not wasting so much time on it, but Strava, Instagram, where can we hit you up?
I'm on Strava, so Thomas DeCanto. I guess if you just search my name, there's not many other Thomas DeCantos out there, I don't think. I only just got Instagram maybe a couple of months ago, so I think it's just Thomas DeCanto. I think if you just search that, I guess I'll come up. And same with Facebook, I guess, Thomas DeCanto. I've got a business.
Facebook. Get the plugs in for that.
Walker Street Sports Podiatry. So I'm not that active on it. I should be, but you know, I'll occasionally post up some relevant stuff. I mean, obviously, because I treat a lot of runners. I'm a runner. I find all that stuff interesting. So I'll maybe post up relevant articles or footwear stuff or whatever on Facebook sometimes on that. On the Walker Street page, So yeah, your runner listeners might find that stuff interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Runners in Sydney with feet problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom's
yeah.
your man, I reckon.
Maybe I'd help you.
Yeah, beautiful, Tom. Well, yeah, as I said, thanks again for your time tonight and sharing all that insightful stuff, especially with training sessions and preparation and all those kind of behind-the-scenes experiences. And, yeah, on behalf of Brad and Julian and I, we really appreciate that you come on and giving us some time.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for having me. I've, like I said to you before, just you know, just when I first chat to you, it's a good podcast. I've just started listening to it, so I think you boys are doing a great job. So keep it up, I appreciate you having me on.
No worries, we appreciate it, and good luck at Canberra this weekend. And yeah, we'll probably catch you in person up at the Gold Coast, I think.
Yeah, sounds good.
Beautiful, Tom.
Get Brad to race it.
Yeah, I'll talk him into it. We record the show tomorrow night, so I'll let him know that.
Right.
He might not race it if you're racing it, but he could become a good pacemaker. He's a very meticulous kind of guy. So, if you're after a good pacemaker, he loves hitting splits at exactly the right time.
Sounds good.
All right, Tom. Thanks a lot for that.
Thanks, Brady.
Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Oh, no.